welcome to episode 108 of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. I'm your host, Tavi Elise Waits. Welcome also to our first episode of 2024. I am so glad to be back, returning to this space with you all. Thanks for being here. I am emerging from a bit of a winter hiatus, and before we get into this very dynamic and interesting episode with our esteemed guests, I do have a few announcements to share with y'all about Rise Up Good Witch and my personal work. First of all, I want to open this New Year's show with some gratitude and thank everyone who has supported me on my journey with this show. Thank you to everyone who has listened in, shared, and extended dollars or encouragement towards this project. It really means a lot to me. I have officially been host of this show for a full year now, and it really has been such a fun, challenging, and unique experience. Podcasting is really different from live performance in, you know, at least several ways, and I told myself that I'd give this project a year of commitment to see if it was right for me, if it was a good fit, if it felt like an appropriate channel for me, and I do think that it is. I'm enjoying this, and so I'm excited to announce that we will be continuing to put out more episodes this year, and we are kicking off this episode is the first of season 7 of Rise Up. So thank you to all the patrons over on our Patreon for all of your continued support, and I do apologize that I was not able to be as active in that space as I wanted to be last year, but if you've been listening in here, you know that 2023 was a long and hard ride for me. There was not going to get too much into it now, but many big kind of milestone, a lot of change last year in that chariot year. I will be putting out a bonus episode up on the Patreon this coming month that is sometime in February, that's a little bit more personal, more of a personal 2023 year in review kind of episode, and also talking a little bit more about what I'm personally getting into in 2024 so far. So keep an eye out for that. As always, we do also continue to invite listeners as well as former guests and collaborators of Rise Up Good Witch to apply to be a guest on the show. You can find the guest inquiry form on my website, www.manateemedicinals.com. I also want to once again extend a lot of gratitude to my friend and comrade Karina Rosella, the creator and former head witch in charge of this show, and to encourage you all to go continue to support all of the important radical work that they are doing, including their Desert Witch Portal space that houses their classes and services like tarot readings, their amazing apothecary shop and community space Milk Thistle in Yucca Valley, California. I admire and I continue to be just so inspired by all of Karina's work. I look up to them so much. I got to spend some virtual time together with them earlier this month in their online class on the Strength card, which is the tarot card for 2024. And it was such a fun, like, small, engaged class. It really reminded me how much I appreciate and value their perspective and their voice and the intentionality and care that they put into everything they do. So again, thank you, Karina, for all that you are, all that you create in the world, and for working with me and for trusting me to adopt this platform. I do want to take a moment to talk about my own self-care in regards to my creativity and this space. The past December, November, October, yeah, four months counting January. I have not felt up to, I'm not a machine. We're not machines. I don't want to create content for the sake of creating content. I'm focusing more on like setting realistic expectations with myself about myself and with others about myself and my regards to like output. especially when so much of the input that we're all taking in is just, you know, untold horrors all the time. And I am not in a body or a time in my life or time in this fractured reality, like where I can force myself to create things that like don't feel authentic to me. Yeah, I'm not gonna force, especially these kinds of conversations that are not always necessarily the most lighthearted conversations in terms of podcasting content. I'm not really gonna force myself to do things that don't feel aligned, to promote myself when it doesn't feel good or in a way that feels icky to me. I'm not going to do that. And, you know, one of Karina's main pieces of advice to me in giving me the keys to this car was to keep it from being a chore, that I need to have fun with it or at least create my own processes that I can enjoy to avoid it becoming something that feels like, you know, another heavy obligation. I got a lot of Virgo placements. I got a Capricorn midheaven. So I do have, you know, the personal tendency to find a way to turn everything into capital W work, which contributes to my stress, insomnia, and chronic pain. So this was advice that I needed to hear. I tried to take it to heart. So, you know, last year we put out 6 solid longer episodes, and I'm sincerely happy with how they all turned out. I feel great about it. It gave me space to zoom out of my own head, to focus on quality over quantity. I would rather put out 2 really good long episodes of this show than 13 shitty ones with bad audio, like not enough thought but behind them, you know? So, and to create a process that feels generative rather than extractive or draining or exploitative. I do make the cover art for each episode individually because I love a visual component, which is, it's like a little treat for my brain each time. I have a blast doing those. I have so much fun making those. Anyway, hey, you know, I like the direction I'm taking things here, but do you? I don't know. This is a community show, but sometimes podcasting can be very lonely. And I feel like I'm yelling into the void a little bit. So please, you know, share your thoughts. If you're on the Patreon, I don't know, shoot me a message. Let me know how you're liking things. Comment on some posts. Let me know how you liked the individual episodes. If you have any feedback. We haven't gotten any Spotify or Apple podcast reviews in a while. So please go leave one of those if you can. Takes 10 seconds. Let me know what you've been enjoying about Rise Up Good Witch the most. Let me know if this show has helped you in any way. It's really helpful for me to be in more reciprocal relationship with community so that I know that this is landing with you. So please, it helps me feel less insane and it helps other people find this space. Okay, I'm off my platform now. So about this episode, this is my first interview with more than one guest. It's also my first international interview where we were connecting across 3 different time zones, which is amazing and a miraculous feat, across Portland, Colorado, and South Africa. I want to thank Nyasha and Grace for being so gracious with their time and energy, for reaching out to me, for collaborating on this episode. I also wanted to mention the illustrator of, we're talking about their publications today, you'll hear all about it, but the illustrator of this unbelievably gorgeous oracle deck, Elemental Alchemist, and the associated guidebook and journal, Kamishka Naidu, who I was not able to include in this interview, but for their work on this incredible project. This is, you know, this is an audio medium here, but I really want to take a moment to communicate how I have never seen anything like this deck and journal in the world before. They are so colorful and lush. It is truly a sensory experience, and it kind of has, you know, I spent some time working with the oracle deck and with the journal. It has kind of its own pulsating heart that really connects you through the experience of your own spiritual practices as you work with the elements. I also want to emphasize how ADHD and neurodivergent friendly this journal is, the journal specifically. It's a journal and it's loosely a planner, but what I love about it as a person who buys a new type of planner, you know, every year convinced that it's going to be the one that fixes my entire life. Okay, so first, this journal, it's very open-ended, i.e. it's not dated, it doesn't have dates. It's meant to be worked through for 5 months through five different elements, but those dates or months are like not set in stone. So you can pick it back up wherever you left off without feeling guilty or needing to skip ahead. Second, it has a lot of space in it for you to do your own thing. There's lots of room to answer the prompts, dream journal entries, and open journaling space. As a way of connecting more with the Oracle deck itself, the journal offers spaces to record your spreads and be in conversation with both your divination tools and any ancestral guides who might be around. And it's also a coloring book. What? It's so fun. Coloring will get me to sit down and, it was so nice to like, there's something really satisfying about sitting down and like crossing off like, yeah, I did my meditation today. So it's not a traditional to-do list planner. It is a spiritual tool to set personal goals and that I think are, you know, kind of realistic and to customize them for yourself and to keep track of your self-care practices like space clearing, spiritual hygiene, meditation, and gratitude practices. I also had a nagging question after we stopped recording. So I asked Niasha for clarification. This is a, you know, this is a BIPOC and a Black focused deck and guide and journal. But I asked for clarification, can white people buy and work with these tools? And her answer was, yes, everyone is welcome to buy and work with these tools, but the authors do recommend using, it's called a deck interview spread. It's detailed in the deck's guidebook, among many other wonderful spreads. And that deck interview spread can help you know how to best work with this deck in your personal practice. So there you go. Go buy these incredible, incredible work. There will be links in the show notes. Without any further ado, please, please enjoy my conversation with Niasha Williams and Grace Bond. Niasha Williams is a passionate social justice griot who grew up living intermittently between the United States and South Africa. Niasha's mission is to use words and stories to decolonize literature, minds, and spiritual practices. Some of Niasha's published works besides Elemental Alchemist include the Ally Baby Can Be series, I Affirm Me, the ABCs of Inspiration for Black Kids, Keep Dreaming, Black Child, and Black Tarot, an ancestral awakening guide and deck. You can donate, share, and support to Niasha's BIPOC-centered publishing press startup just launched, Fire and Honey Press, at the link in the show notes. Grace Banda is a South African storyteller and herbalist who understands the power of stories in her culture and hopes to craft meaningful tales that can recreate and reimagine a new world. She hopes to continue sharing her work, stories, and herbalism with the world.
Niasha and Grace, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So we've been talking for a while, trying to make our time zones and the fates align. And I'm just so grateful to have gotten to spend some time with these wonderful books that you published last year, this Elemental Alchemist Oracle Deck and Guidebook. It is so beautiful, and it's been such a nice experience to, yeah, spend some time with. And then this secondary guided journal that comes with it. Just what beautiful publications, so unique. And we're going to get into some of that today. So could you tell us a little bit about the origin story of this deck and the journal and just how this beautiful project came about?
Do you want to go, Grace, or do you want me to go?
I can start. I remember I had just moved to the States and to be an au pair, and I reconnected with Nyasha. We kind of started bouncing ideas off of each other, and she shared with me that she had wanted to make a divinational tool, which I resonated with. And it originally started as us having discussed a different story idea that involved the elements, and then discussing the divinational tool based on elements. And it was kind of like, oh my gosh, we should create the deck together. So she invited me to collaborate on this project with her, and that's kind of how we got started on it. It was originally just the Oracle deck and guided book, because both of us were tapping into spaces of divination and tapping into different elements as well. And the guided journal was actually after we had been picked up, and it's really interesting because I think it was meant to come out of the Oracle deck. Like, it had to be complete in order to create the journal. So we created the journal afterwards, and even that was a very powerful kind of creation to build together from the Oracle deck. Did I leave anything out?
I mean, I would say that I do have a tool that I had before this deck. So I had my Black Tarot, and the illustrator for both decks is the same illustrator. It's a friend of mine who I went to high school with, which I think we'll discuss a little further. But her name's Kamishka Naidu. And yeah, there was a deep shift in my spiritual path. Like, I kind of think I was always searching. And when I stepped into ancestral veneration, everything just aligned and felt correct. So that's when I stepped into creating Black Tarot, which I hear from all the accolades is just giving so much to people in terms of ancestral connection. And then, you know, Grace and I was like, I would love to create an Oracle deck. And Grace and I were really diving into elemental stuff. I know that we have some pieces that we still need to go back to at some point and work on in terms of writing stories around the elements. But the elemental alchemist came through very clearly for us, and what that needed to be. And so that's kind of how that all came together.
It's so cool. It sounds like it developed really organically. And I guess to sort of like backtrack and start at the beginning, I mean, I read your bios, but do you want to give a little bit more context into like who you both are and like where you are in the world and also what your connection to each other is, however you want to go about talking about that?
Yeah. So Grace and I are sisters. We are both adopted. We're transracial adoptees. So our parents are white. And then, yeah, so we didn't grow up from a young age together, but I would say from like middle age to going to high school is kind of where our like paths intertwined through family. And yeah, Grace and I have always been connected through various hobbies. We have very similar interests in a lot of ways. And so that has always bonded us and connected us. We've always been into the creative realm and creative spirit. And so we've always been very connected in that way. Yeah, so I'll leave there, Grace. You can add more and then we can, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. And then for a while, one of those hobbies wasn't writing. I think I've always been writing. And then I learned that Nyasha also loved to write. And I was like, oh my gosh, you love to write? And then we kind of dove into it kind of felt like tapping into really strong creative magic or creative energy. And I think there are different parts of our connection that make those sparks. And in the elements, it would like create fire, which is interesting because it's, she more aligns with water and I more align with earth. But, you know, when we were like together, we were generating like the creativity that's coming from fire, the airflow of like new idea and like movement. And we've been, because of our very similar interests and her having stepped into her spiritual journey, I was able to actually see how right that felt for her. And also just realizing that my journey wouldn't look exactly like hers or anybody else's, but it was kind of whatever feels the most natural. And that is something that didn't come very naturally to me before, doing what feels natural. Was I always felt like it was doing for others instead of what feels natural to me. So I feel like when we intersected again as adults, it was just even more powerful because I felt like I was learning so much, and I was hoping that my presence was having the same impact as it was on me. Since then, I've moved back to South Africa. The time zones and kind of just having different zones and shifts. We don't spend as much like time as we'd like, but definitely I think that when we are together, it's like bouncing off each other. So, and there's points of our lives that have been like that. It's that and growing and bouncing off and growing. And yeah, that's kind of been us.
And I will say, yeah, there's been a lot of movement back and forth. So like, that's kind of where, in terms of reconnecting, because I feel like you hear that more with people you don't live with, but it's like, you know, we have quite a few big age gap between us. So I'm in my 30s, Grace is in her early 20s. So there's a big gap between us in that. And so we're in very different journeys on our life journeys, just in that way. So, you know, I went to college and, you know, Grace was still in South Africa at that time. And then, you know, there's been lots of back and forth between me and South Africa and then Grace coming to the States. And so that's what we mean in terms of us connecting. But yeah, Grace and I have always just had creative spirits in terms of loving to cook together, loving to cook with people. And we just have this spirit of wanting to connect with people in creating.
Thank you so much for sharing about your relationship. It's so beautiful. And yeah, the certain aspect of this that I resonate with, my sibling and I are like 6 years apart. And so I've kind of like, I don't know, I got to sort of like watch them go through the hell of their Saturn return, like, you know, it's years after I had sort of recovered from mine. And well, just how beautiful it is to come into your own journeys of self, especially as transracial adoptees, which is, you know, such like a difficult and fraught journey, especially in the US. And to be able to, despite distance, despite age, to be able to connect and collaborate and like heal some of that disconnection and focus on, to have the space to focus on something besides, you know, pain or trauma, or like to focus on healing and creating something new. And also like creating, I mean, publishing a book as one person or an oracle deck as one person is, I mean, I haven't done it, but I'm, you know, familiar with the process. It's such a journey and takes so much time. So I just want to say how impressed I am and how grateful I am for, yeah, the gift of this deck and this journal, which we'll get more into. For anyone in our audience who may be new to some of these practices, could you explain a little for us what the difference is between a tarot deck and an oracle deck?
The floor is yours.
Oh, okay, cool. So I actually just did a whole event on this out in Colorado here. So if you are local to the area, I do events, I do things, I would love to connect. But I did an event looking at tarot and oracle because I've written both. So in the most basic sense, tarot has a very strong structure. It's a little bit more rigid. You know, when you pull tarot, no matter almost any deck, like obviously you kind of still have to learn because every author and illustrator is going to have their own flavor within it. You know, when you pull the death card, you know what that means. When you pull the lover's card, you know what that means. When you pull the five of wands, you know what that means. So there is this structure there. Whereas oracle, there are no rules in terms of how many cards, in terms of the themes and anything. Like it is just really what spirit has told the people to make in terms of this deck. So our deck has 41 cards, but that was random. Like it's a random number, but that's what we ended up on. So, you know, oracle is a lot more free flowing in that way. And it's like, you're having to learn a new system each time you use someone else's oracle deck. But they obviously complement each other very beautifully as well. And I believe that, again, I hope I've been told that my two decks complement each other, just being written by both me, like my energy being in both decks with the tarot and the oracle. But I think that we often use them in conjunction with each other, and oracles are great for clarification. I know that there is this sort of, what would I say? Belief in the spiritual community that oracles are a little nicer. They can be like a little bit more forgiving and kind, and a little bit more, what is even the word? Like just, I don't know, softer.
Gentle
and softer on the message. Yes. But we've been told by people who use our deck that both my decks, tarot and oracle, are very honest and very blunt. So
yes.
No matter what you do, it's going to tell you very truthfully what is going on.
It sure is. First spread I did with it, I went to the park and I took my dog, and it was a sunny day, and I was laying under this picnic blanket eating a donut. And I just did one of the, you do have this guide that I think is really lovely and is a great way for getting to know these cards. Little teeny tiny deck guide. It has the card meanings and kind of talks about the different archetypes and also the elements. And it gives you some wonderful spreads that you can do, like a fire spread, an earth spread, a water spread, air spread, etc. And really, it's a great introduction to this deck. It really read me to filth. I was like, this is rude. But it was a really unique experience for sure.
Yes. So, I mean, and I think sometimes we have days where we need to go to decks that are a little bit more gentle in messaging. But if you are looking for those straight shooters, really honest and truthful decks, I would definitely recommend Black Tarot and Elemental Alchemist. They will tell you what's up.
It's refreshing. I mean, you know, like honesty is refreshing, especially if you're like really, I don't know, maybe if you're like really used to working with traditional tarot decks and you're like, oh yeah, sure, it's this one. Like, and you kind of maybe certain things are like self-fulfilling prophecies, or you're familiar with these energies and these archetypes and these ideas. I don't know, it can be refreshing to like, just like going to see a reader or you know, a healer, or a psychic, somebody new who can give you a fresh energy, and I think we need that. And I guess on that note, yeah, maybe talk a little bit about this is like, well, let me not get ahead of myself. I have a bunch of questions. So first, tell me what is unique or special about your Elemental Alchemist deck?
Well, the Oracle deck, I feel like it is unique which stands out from other decks, because I think it was created with the intention to connect you to the elements while aiding you in your journey through decolonization, and also teaching you. So it's a combination of teaching, honoring, and really breaking out of things that we have been programmed to just automatically respond to. And these are things that are in our daily lives, emotions, feelings, and they're so connected to the elements. However, it's not fully broken down in how you can actually take this energy and utilize it, connect with it, not just use it, but connect with it and honor it, because it is going to honor you. Each of the activities and each of the cards and words of wisdom came from, I feel like, different points. I would say that the difference is in the writing spirit, it felt very much like the card that I was meant to be working on and writing had actually happened to me, and it was affecting me. When I had to write about creativity, I felt what it was like to be out of balance, in balance, and how I needed to connect to the element of creativity, the element of fire, in order to really ignite what I needed to overcome my rough patch. And then I was like, wow. And I wrote about it, and it was a very intimate experience. So I don't know for sure that that's what makes it different, but through emotion, I feel like it's not, oh, again, the truth is not always nice to hear, but somebody being able to tell you what you need and how to do something, be willing to share. I think that it tells you even more about the elements, because they're all about connection. And the spirit of the deck is also to connect with its user and connect the user with its external forces. And those are external forces, yeah.
So layering on what Grace said, I think I think decolonizing is the first step, but I think that a huge part of this deck goes beyond decolonizing. So I feel like it moves into indigenizing and liberation. And the reason why I say that is because, again, a huge part of colonization is deconnecting us from ourselves and from the elements, and deconnecting us from community, and deconnecting us from connection. And so when you're working through that and you're moving past that and you're building that connection and you're reconnecting with the elements, that is deeply moving into indigenizing and deeply moving towards liberation and liberation for self and all. I think Grace talked about spirit cards. I think something that's different with our deck is that, again, elementally, when we think about the elements, most people, unless we are looking at Eastern medicine, Eastern practices, you're generally looking at air, earth, fire, and water. We added spirit to our deck, so that is the fifth element within our deck. There is a goddess within each element. So spirit does not have a goddess card, but each of the other elements have a goddess within the cards. And so the way that we balance the deck is each suit. So the elements are all suits. And besides spirit has five cards. It's its own, doing its own thing. But all four other elements have a goddess at the top. And then you have four cards that are what the element looks like in balance, and four cards of what that element may look like out of balance. And so, again, we wanted to help you honor the elements within and outside of yourself and help you find that balance within yourself.
That's so cool. And it's such a great approach. And I think it's kind of like needed, because I'm not a professional tarot reader. I'm still learning more all the time about these practices, but my just kind of observational experience is that I don't know, people see a card and they're like, oh no, is that good or bad? Like, it's kind of this binary, or can be. Sometimes people want like a yes or no answer. Sometimes people want things to be very black and white. And I think with the different suits and thinking about things being in balance or out of balance, I feel like that's such a, I just feel hearing you talk about that, I feel like an opening, like that feels very expansive, and it feels like it allows for a lot of different, I don't know, a lot of different experiences and for people to have a different perspective when doing reading for themselves and others.
I agree with that. And I think, yeah, the binary is something that we're working on. And I think that like, our society so leans to the binary. So I feel like it's something you have to be so conscious in moving past and working through. And thankfully there are beautiful, beautiful books in the world that are doing these kinds of things. And so many people I can recommend who are creating products that are pushing past the simple binaries of our world or the way that it's been assumed or our systems have created. I think that something that was always helpful to me when I started reading was an action step. So great, I got this reading, what's next? And I feel like that to me, I started with Kim Cran's decks. I'm sure a lot of people know her Animal Spirit deck, and she just has the Alchemist deck that just came out recently. I love those decks. And Kim Cran always has action steps and like, how ways to dig deeper in with that message. And so with both Black Tarot and the Elemental Alchemist, both of those have action steps. Like, what's next? Now I got this reading, I received these cards, what do I do? And so I think allowing people to have some sort of next step after that is always super important. And definitely something that felt very natural to create within Ardex as well.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. And I was also important to the imagery was really important as well in the creation of the deck, including African print. And because a lot of that print is not in a lot of divinational tools. And those are tools that we are using to connect with our ancestors through ancestral veneration. The colors, the color correspondences are like meaningful, and the same goes for even in tarot. It's very, the structure that it follows is also very much rooted in numerology. Like the each individual number and the combination of numbers has a very powerful effect and meaning. And we wanted to do that through our including of the African print and the visuals not being so unrealistic that the user couldn't connect to them. So they're in natural, possibly everyday positions, but they are still standing out. And based on the color that's flowing through it, you kind of know what is supposed to be connecting to you, to the individual person.
And I, again, wasn't seeing decks that had representation. Like, there's not enough out there. I'm like, it's growing and it's evolving. But when I created Black Tarot and this deck, it was like, I need to see myself. So, you know, these decks are completely Black centered. So variations of brown skin, Black skin. And that's what you're seeing there. And that was necessary for me and healing for me to see, because I feel very called to divinational tools, particularly cartomancy. So that felt very correct to create. And then like Grace said, it was a non-negotiable for me with the illustrator. I was like, I have got to have African print. And I was like, these are the colors for the different elemental, like for each suit. And I was like, we need African print, like in each color, showcased throughout each element. And so I think she just really did a beautiful job. If you speak to the illustrator, she'll talk about how easy it came to her in terms of just this deck and the flow and the creation of these cards.
What was the card you just held up? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so this card is a spirit card. So all the spirit cards have white and just kind of like the circle realm around them. This is spiritual awakening. So I pulled a card from each of my decks before starting. I like to do that before these kinds of sessions. And so when I pulled this card, I mean, feel like, I don't know if y'all have been feeling it, but there's been a shift as soon as we went into this new calendar year, just because it's now an eight. Like, I'm feeling that expansion, the energy's changing. I feel like there's just a lot of people stepping into their soul missions and what they need to be doing. Like, I know we've been hearing it for a while, but the energy is different this year. I think I'm hearing it from everybody that they're just feeling like there was, especially after that Mercury retrograde like ended, everything just cleared, and it just feels like everyone's really moving really pretty smoothly this year in terms of like doing the actives and doing the work, like moving in the ways that they hear and feel called to right now.
I just pulled, I don't know, just kind of lazily pulling three cards. That's what I got. I got the change card.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me what element this one is?
That's air. So the yellow.
That would be air.
Yes.
Two beautiful people riding on a motorcycle. The swirl of yellow behind them for the air element. I got wealth slash abundance.
That is our earth element. Beautiful.
And I pulled, I believe, also a spirit card, a healing.
That is water, actually.
Water. That makes sense. The blue.
Beautiful. Healing.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Yeah, there's so, I've never seen a deck like this. It feels so good to work with.
I pulled a fire card. It's inspiration and creativity, which I feel like conversations like this are really inspiring.
Absolutely.
I agree. And I would never have, I don't know if I would have ever found or seen this deck if y'all hadn't reached out and connected with me. So, you know, thank you so much for just like bringing this into my life. I'd love to talk a little bit about the journal, because I think it's really unique. It's kind of I don't know if planner is the right word. It's like I feel like it's a spiritual hygiene, just in my limited experience working with it. I worked with it like really consistently for like a month, and then I just kind of had it hanging out, and I'll check in with it every now and again. But yeah, if you could tell us a little bit about how it's laid out and like kind of what the intention is.
Absolutely. So the journal is a 5-month journal. You're working with each element. And so you are literally going through and sitting with each element, and spending a month in that space. And so when we created it, we wanted something that, first of all, was so very clearly creating ease in reconnecting with the elements and honoring the elements and being able to, like, I think I always think of decolonizing our calendar. I'm like, that keeps coming up for me every year. And so little by little, I think I'm making that shift in indigenizing my calendar, and like, what does that look like as I'm creating that shift? And so I think for Grace and I, following the wheel of the year and like looking at the wheel of the year and what that looked like. So in the front, like you, if you've worked with the journal, you'll see that we have all of the wheel of the year dates and what that looks like on, because of course Grace is in the Southern Hemisphere, I'm in the Northern. So we have both dates for that. But what those celebrations look like and what honoring those spaces as the seasons are changing looks like. We also have mantras towards decolonizing and kind of re-acclimating in what does it mean, what kind of verbiage can we use around reconnecting ourselves with the elements and the earth. And then in terms of the layout, I love bullet trackers, but cannot draw. So I was like, I need something that's giving me magic, that's giving me that energy of being able to feel like a bullet tracker without me having to be this fabulous artist. So that was the intention. And so I spoke to our illustrator, Kamishka Naidu, and I was like, I want something for each element that allows people to track various things, which we'll go into a little deeper of what those different trackers are for. But I wanted people to be able to do that and feel like they're coloring and engaging and it feels interactive without having to feel like you need to do all this, have all this artistic skill behind your bullet tracking. So in each section, you have first a fill my cup tracker, which that is how are you doing things to take care of yourself and take care of you, your heart, your soul? How are you taking care of you? So that is fill up my cup. Then you have a tracker that is your magical housekeeping. So that's like taking care of our altar, taking care of our home, taking care of our space, and just having a way to track your caring and spiritual hygiene. Really. So making sure that you are honoring and cleaning your space as it needs to be. I think sometimes people forget about their altars. And so this is the kind of tracker and journal that would help in that movement. We also have a meditation tracker. And obviously meditation is not limited to one form of meditation. Meditation looks different for everyone. And so making space for people being able to track when they're meditating. And then we have a gratitude tracker. So tracking all the moments of gratitude and all the moments of joy and things that just like uplifted your spirit, tracking those. So those trackers are in the beginning, and then I'll let Grace go into the sections after the trackers for each element.
The space after the trackers is more for the writing prompt, space for shadow work. And the prompts are both to encourage and push you to do shadow work, but it's also correlated to each of the elements. Throughout the journal, there's activities to connect and keep you grounded to the element. It just expands on different ways that people can actually balance themselves through elemental activities. So each section has a journal prompt, trackers, yes, the activities. So you have an elemental activity, which is dedicated to observation. You have an elemental activity that is like physically being in the element. So air, earth, spirit is all activities relating to dream work, cloud work, water, how to connect to your water in different ways. So those elemental observations are like set into motion because, again, people are so kind of wrapped up in the modern day to day that it's also really easy to take time out of your day to sit and connect and appreciate the element. So this is serving as a reminder, just as the spiritual housekeeping, to kind of, in order to honor and connect with something, you really have to observe it. What else?
I think that's so useful. And something I wrote down here that you said when we met before is that people are really across the board looking to, wherever you are in the world, are looking to heal the disconnect, not just that we have from each other, but that we have with nature and with our natural environment, especially as we're experiencing mass war, global devastation. I think we're all coming from different places in terms of like what kinds of environments we're in, and I don't know, when a therapist tells you, like, I'm thinking about how when a somatic, you know, when a therapist gives somebody a somatic prompt and they're like, well, where do you feel that emotion in your body? And they're like, I don't know. I have no idea. I think a lot of times people or people are like, well, why don't you, I don't know, or sort of being given a lot of conflicting messages that may be foreign or suggestions about how to like heal ourselves and our relationship with things. And if people don't have an actionable, as you said, like an action item, if people don't have, if you live in the middle of a city, for example, and you don't have a lot of access to natural spaces or clean air, or clean water, like how do you connect? And I think this journal does a really great job of offering some very concrete, but open-ended ways of connecting with those elements, no matter where you are in the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. There's also a section after all of the developing with the elements for people to actually practice their divination and interpretation with the Oracle deck. So not only is it helping you stay on track with all of your spiritual housekeeping and connections, but in order for you to actually get to know a divinational tool, consistent use of it and kind of learning how you interpret the deck is required. So in each section, there is also space for the different readings and questions you could be asking during the time that you're working with those elements. At the beginning of each section, there is a page dedicated to the different correspondences, colors that go with the element, tools that you can use and have access to in order to connect deeper. These tools are also very much aligned to the structure of tarot. The elemental structure combined with the numerology also very much shapes the tarot structure, which is why they can work so well side by side. But it also gives you objects that you can put on your altar specifically to dedicate to the spiritual element of spirit, air. Spirit is more of our ancestors and spirit guides, or whoever we connect with. But our other elements and connecting to those spirits, it's really important to bring colors and tools that are connected to that element in order to show that you're honoring the different spaces and kind of placement of where those elements belong and flow.
I just got a shell from a market I did in December that I added to my altar, so that felt really good because water is my baby. So, and I work with a lot of connected to water, so
we talk a lot on this podcast about spiritual bypassing and kind of the just so many different kind of wrong way paths that the New Age landscape tends to take in terms of white supremacy, in terms of history. So in this current wellness, healing, spiritual landscape, it's pretty inescapable how consistently African traditional and indigenous language, terminologies, and practices get blurred and appropriated or misappropriated and misused or abused and taken out of context. So especially when it comes to speaking about nature and the elements. As you've said, and as it is said in the deck and in the journal, Elemental Alchemist is explicitly a decolonial work of art and spiritual reclamation. So can you both speak about that a bit in relation to this deck and also who it's for?
Absolutely. So I think the one thing I will always speak to when we talk about appropriation and the gatekeeping that certain communities are like, this is our practice, you know, and it shouldn't be, it's not for everybody, you know, that is true. There is that space. Now, the complication becomes for those of us through colonization who have been stripped of our land, who were removed from our spiritual practices and are trying to reconnect now, there's this challenge in, you know, kind of exploring to figure out where we're from, where what we're connected to, where are our roots in all of these things. So I think that that can be a challenge. I know when I first started, for example, I used white sage. Like that was what was everyone was talking about. Oh, white sage. And as soon as I learned that that was something that was to indigenous communities of America, because we know indigenous is a global term, I recognized that that felt like something that maybe I can utilize other things to cleanse and respectfully cleanse my space with other in other practices. Now, there are definitely people in the Black community who are have indigenous blood. They are connected. So that may look different for them. But personally for me, I felt like I can find another tool. Let me be respectful of the community. So I think it's a huge part of it to me is accountability. We are going to make mistakes. That's just part of our world and our systems. We're all learning to untangle from these systems and build new ones. And in that, we are going to make mistakes, in that we are going to have problems and things are going to come up, but it's how you handle the call out and accountability within that, I think. And then just, I think with BIPOC is being super gracious and being super compassionate and understanding as we're navigating that space, because we really have been stripped and disconnected from these, from our roots, from the elements, from so many things through colonization. And as we're trying to re-embrace, it's a journey. It's a messy journey that we're all navigating. And so to me, I think it's just about honoring that, like, yes, honor that people are figuring it out, honor that mistakes are going to be made, and honor that everything is not going to be always a perfect black and white. But in the same breath, it's like, it's all learning. So making sure that you're following people who have been in the practice, who weren't as disconnected, making sure that we are doing as much reading and doing as much research and as much as we dabble in certain realms, making sure that we're doing as much, I think, expanding our understanding of whatever we're trying to work with or dabble in. So we have the best knowledge as we're working with whatever we're trying to work, is what I would say.
I definitely resonate with what you're saying. I learned, I think, a lot more about this during the herbalism course that I took with Indigi Golden Herbal Academy. Really, really magical course, by the way. But one of the things that I really enjoyed about that cohort is we really were all in different places doing different forms of divination, different forms of connecting to our spirits and our journeys. And we kind of created this platform where we could share and also teach. I noticed that, like, I had space to talk about some of the South African traditional customs that I was experiencing since my spiritual awakening. And that's because a lot of before my spiritual awakening was so much misinformation. And I see how that's a part of colonization, because it can disconnected me from my journey and my purpose for so long. And when I finally did get there, it's, I have no idea where to start with all the information. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I've been doing since then and now that I kind of continuously do, it's actually connected, I think, to just the spirit in me that wants to be a librarian and preserving of information, putting together information that specifically belongs together about different cultures. That is a very important, like, job and skill. And because somebody will come from, you know, like us, coming from a place where we don't know anything about our cultures and journeys. And there's not a lot of people to ask. And it's also about knowing kind of what information is correct and what has been colonized and don't have access to. Traditional healers here are like, it's kind of still very much shamed in our society. They get called things like witch doctors and Sangoma. Sangoma, the term is actually, it means ancestral healer, but it has been so demonized. Just, I remember growing up and being like, oh, they have that spirit in them. And just, that's all I knew about it. It's just some traditional spirit. And sometimes people get taken by the spirit. But when I actually came to learn about it, I realized that these are just healers and our society wants us to look down on them. And that all of that was kind of eye-opening, because I feel like just by going by what I was being fed was a form of appropriation. I wasn't honoring South African traditional healers and this is what they do and how they do it. But instead of asking, it was just, I'm going with this information. So I also feel like being open to the space of like learning and, oh, if this practice does resonate with you, do what you can to learn as much about it so that you're doing it well. I'm not saying it's all about wellness and perfectionism or anything like that, but in order to, like a baking recipe, baking can be really easy. You know, they say follow the instructions, but it's, are you like going to it super stressed with little knowledge about it? Or there's tips and tricks that could be helpful that, you know, you could read. And I know a lot of people are just jump to the recipe and you're in, but somebody put in the effort to write that whole, here are the tips and tricks before the recipe. And most of us just jump to the recipe. So I think if we are going to explore and expand on spiritual practices, it's so important to do the research and love to continue learning, because it's kind of always going to be the journey of continuous learning.
I'm going to expand on that a tad more. So I love Grace's analogy with the baking, because I just spoke to someone who I highly admire in the tarot realm. And we were talking about, I asked them the question, I was interviewing them and I asked them, what are your thoughts on people who are like, oh, I don't buy my own tarot decks. I believe in the aspect of having them gifted to me. And I've always kind of thought like, meh, I don't think it's a big deal. Like, I'm going to go buy my tarot deck. If something calls me, I'm going to buy it. And what they said to me resonated very deeply, because they were said, I also don't think it's a big deal. But I think that where, if we look at the origins of that, I think the origins came from learning from an elder. So I think we've lost this practice of elders and we've lost this practice of learning from others. And part of it's hard because, like, even the Black community, it's like some of our spiritual practices maintained. They're here. They just appear differently. And some of the elders aren't even aware that they are doing them. And so hidden in plain sight, you know.
Don't put your purse on the floor.
Exactly. All that. And so hoodoo very much is an example of that, but things continuing, but people not really calling it hoodoo or speaking it out loud, but it was still being practiced. And so I think the challenge is that I do think that we need elders. The elders are there for a reason. Elders are guiding and they are to help us as we learn these practices. And I think there's been this gap and this loss within that. And I think that that is a challenge. And kind of plays into what Grace was saying about the baking and like terms of like that guidance, those tips, those like almost that like nurturing space. And I think this is why we connect with the elements. This is why we connect with our ancestors, because we regain that knowledge through them. If you sit with them, if you're making space for spirit, that will come through for you. You will learn. You might, again, you're probably going to make some mistakes. I know I have, but it's a matter of like learning and listening to spirit as we're evolving in this. And then I definitely want to say that if you are non-BIPOC, I'm going to say you have decolonizing and indigenizing and things to do. The first question you need to go to is, who were you before you were white? And you need to do that journey and you need to walk in that. And you have spiritual practices that were before you were white, and go figure that out and walk in that. I think whiteness, just like a lot of us, causes one to search because you're not as rooted in where you were or your people or your ancestors and your connection. So just like all BIPOCs, white people need to go on this journey themselves of self-discovery, reconnecting with their ancestors. They have healing work to do with their ancestors, deep healing work, as we all do, but it looks different. But I think that that is something that, in terms of, I think white, there's a lot of talk of white people appropriating like yoga and all these different things. And I think it's this search for tradition. It's this search for ancestral connection and things connect that are deeply healing to the soul. And I think that's because your whiteness has disconnected you from your roots in that way. And so there's this journey for you. And then I think in ancestral veneration, I always say, if you open your eyes, and to me, if you haven't watched American Gods, watch American Gods. I'm also always going to recommend Lovecraft Country because those two shows are phenomenal. But
I second that.
Absolutely. Both of those shows are phenomenal. But I mean, and there's always, we're going to say there's always like things they could do better, but generally great shows. That being said, I was going to say ancestral veneration, once you wake up to that and you pay attention and you realize and you practice venerating things and venerating your ancestors and doing venerational practice, you realize our world, we're venerating so much we're not conscious of. And so start waking up to that. I think for me, I even like think about our money. Think about how much power money holds in our society. Think about who's on our money. So just sit with all these things, sit with what, and the ways. This is why people are upset with names that are like, and the things, like when you name certain things, when statues get named, buildings get named, that's all venerating. And who are we venerating? And is this someone we want to be venerating? Just sitting with all of that.
Mm-hmm. I just thought about putting Harriet Tubman on a $20 bill, and it's like, that's not going to fix it.
I know. I mean, I need Harriet on that 20. I feel like that is good in terms of just like energetically, I feel like we need her. But I've heard so many crazy things. They're talking about putting, like keeping, I think Jackson's on our 20 right now, right?
I think so.
They're talking about putting Jackson on the back and Harriet on the front. And I'm like, no bills are like that. Why would you do that? Like, no other bills are like that. Why, once you start putting up BIPOC, would you ever do that? And then they just gave us a Harriet coin. And I'm like, where's the bill? Like, the bill is what I've been waiting for. And so the last two presidents we've had currently in power and the one before, both of them have pushed off putting Harriet on this bill. And you have to sit in deeply. Why? Why are they sitting on that?
Thank you both so much for sharing. What came up for me is just the tragicness of how global anti-Blackness is, and just how casually people still mock and sort of other marginalize like traditional African spiritual practices. And people still say, I hear it in healing spaces of people being like, oh, well, it's not voodoo. And like, you know, people sell these voodoo dolls at like Barnes and Noble. And without, you know, and it's because there's this severing for everyone culturally from like what that is a real, you know, this is a real religion with history and pain. And
Also, and Hollywood did an amazing job, right? Like Hollywood was so, like, so influential in the way people view voodoo, especially, and hoodoo. And you can see it in our Disney films. I was like, I'm waiting for a Disney film where the black character stays the black character the whole time and is not an anamorphic animal the whole time. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for that. Like, things like this, you know, that just, like, sit with you. But The Princess and the Frog, like, voodoo is just the way that they have just so simplified and just made it all about the doll. I'm like, there's so much more to that practice, and it's just been so demonized and simplified in what it is. And I think these are the things that I think people are trying to change and view differently. But Christianity's done, has its hold, and has done really, you know, a lot of work in terms of people sometimes breaking free of understanding that we had practices before Christianity, and understanding that, yes, Christianity, like, our practices have been melded into Christianity in some ways too. So there's been a place for it. But also, I think that, like, there's this deep work of decolonizing Christianity for me that needs to be done with our people, just because it's very layered, very, very layered in terms of the history and why our community is so deeply rooted to the church, and why that is, and what needs to be done in terms of, like, what's next for us. I think a lot of people who are in the church are not doing as much of a critical analysis of Christianity as I would prefer, and hope that we can eventually move into as a society.
I guess it's about time to wrap up here. We could get into all of this for a long time, but your time is valuable. There's much to discuss, but we all have valuable time. So if you maybe would like to share just, like, a thought or a quote or a piece of advice or something from an energy or a prompt from this guide or book about moving into the season where you both are. For us here in the Northern Hemisphere, we are in winter, and where Grace is, it's summer. I'll leave it open to you.
Yeah, so we're in winter. We're about to move into, like, negatives in a second. So Colorado is real cold right now. And I'm just, like, listening to the nature. I'm like, I move in alignment with nature. So, you know, giving yourself grace, not expecting instantaneous responses, not expecting that from other people, not making yourself, holding yourself to that level as well. This is a time of rest and reflection. That's what winter is about. So just allowing yourself to be given that space and that grace right now, and giving that same space to others, I think, is highlighted for me.
So we are in summer, and it's been a really hot summer, but I've been, I think, in more in touch with the summer and the spirit of summer by really embracing the length of the days. So I feel like the energy has been more like productivity and cleaning. It's very much a mix of kind of the spirit of cleaning that comes from spring and going into summer. That trend has to continue in order to make sure things are going well. It's hard to actually get things done in messy spaces. So I feel like it's been like clearing and resetting and allowing air to flow, especially during the heat, is really nice. They say in order to make energy move in your space, move 26 pieces around the space that you're in, just to really move the chi in the space. So kind of been doing that, but also summer is very long and hot. So honoring when you do need to, like, rest and lie down is also, it's like, yes, we're doing all this work, but don't forget to rest and don't forget to sleep. Coming up in February will be Lammas, which kind of begins our descent into autumn, where we are going to be in a very grateful 3 months, because fall is all about gratitude and just the abundance, because we're celebrating harvest. So we're going to be having our first kind of celebration of going into the season of gratitude.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Is there both great ideas and approaches? I am very much ready to, I'd say my piece is, I've just, especially the last few years and especially during the pandemic, I've really leaned into just like fully rejecting the like Gregorian calendar and like this whole new year, new me bullshit. Like I have leaned into really listening to my body. Historically, December through like February is like just like the worst time of year for my joints. I'm in the Pacific Northwest where it's cold and it's damp and it's wet and gray for just months and months. So just really honoring the hibernation that I need to do, and not, you know, finding ways that I can quote unquote be productive that don't look, you know, the same every time. So taking care of my body and finding ways to get into projects in gentle ways without burning myself out. Is there anything else coming up that you two will link to everything else? And I'll talk a little bit more about where people can find and buy your book and the deck. I'll do that in an outro, but is there anything else that you'd like to promote or want people to know about your project?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you live in Colorado, please follow me, because I got a lot of cool, magical things going on. And if you have children, I have lots of children's books that are very much centered in activism and social justice. So if you hear that call, please step into that. I have a couple more coming out this year, which I'm really excited about. I never saw any Where's Waldo or those kinds of books. I never saw diverse versions. So I'm having one of those made, created that. So that comes out like in the later half of this year. And then I wrote a book with my mother in love. So my husband's mom, my mother in love and I wrote a book, and it's a hoodoo book. So if that calls to you too, that is, we're definitely paying homage to hoodoo and just honoring, Black spiritual practices and dreaming, really.
That is amazing. What's it called and where can people find it?
Yeah, so Saturday Magic can be pre-ordered online. It comes out in June, but pre-orders help authors and lets people know that people are interested, and it really supports us. So if you hear that call, please support. And yeah, the second book is called Where's Coquetso? The search and find book. Pre-orders aren't available for that one yet, but soon. But yes, so please support if you are able to and hear the call. And yeah, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you for having us in the space.
Yeah, thank you for having us in the space. It's been absolutely lovely.
It's been lovely connecting with you both. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And take care and happy New Year. To the best of our ability.
I say happy new calendar year is what I say.
Yes,
because my new year starts in the spring. I'm resting until the spring.
Yes, absolutely. And congratulations. Congratulations to you both on all of these publications. You should be very proud. It's important work.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to directly support the creation and production of more important conversations about tarot, art, activism, herbal medicine, wellness culture, astrology, and more, please do consider joining our Patreon, where you can sign up for a monthly contribution as low as $2 a month at patreon.com/riseupgoodwitchremix. That's remix with two X's. Not in a place to contribute financially? I get it. Here are some totally free ways to support the livelihood of this important project, which are just as valuable. Leave us a review. Follow us on Instagram @_riseupgoodwitch444. Share the show or link to your favorite episode on social media. Tell a friend or family member about us. Word of mouth is crucial for a scrappy DIY show like ours, and it's how a lot of people get connected in. Thanks again to everyone for all of your support, and I will see you again next time. Bye.